Hello and welcome to Food and Emotional Nourishment. I think we'll probably have some people join us as the call goes on. So we're just going to roll with this morning. But I wanted to give us a few moments all each to orient to why we're here. I offer this webinar a few times a year because it always seems relevant. It always feels very personal, and there's always such a huge response to it. So food and emotional nourishment, what I mean by that is starting to understand the reasons why we reach for particular forms of nourishment. And food being the most basic form of nourishment that we know as human beings, other than touch and affection, that sort of comes later. It's like the most basic need is sustenance, food on a very practical kind of plain level. And we'll get into this in more detail in what I'm calling the lecture, which feels very formal. But understanding that not only do we need to be nourished on a body level, but a heart level and emotional level as well. And starting to understand the ways that our food choices, habits, patterns can be a reflection of or a trigger for our emotional behavior. So that's sort of our point in being here today. And I really welcome your questions, your comments. If you're on a computer, you can use the chat function. If you're listening to this recording after the fact, you're more than welcome to email me, and that's Stacy Moves, and Stacy spelled EY at gmail.com. And if you are in a place where you can kind of dedicate your energy to this conversation, I'd like you to feel into this quote unquote lecture as almost like a guided meditation from start to finish. We will do practices that feel more specifically like meditative practices. But if you're in a place where you have relative privacy, you might light a candle, you might have a journal nearby, and just give yourself the opportunity to be here, body, mind, and spirit. And I'm just going to take a deep breath for myself to land here. So as I said, food is our basic building block. In the yoga tradition, the physical body is called the Anamaya Kosha. Anna in Sanskrit means food. And maya can mean covering or illusion or sheath. So it kind of refers to the part of our reality as beings that is dependent on food, that is made of food, that is built from food. And anyone who's listening who is a mother or really has any awareness of pregnancy and how that works understands that a baby is built from not only the food that the pregnant person eats, but also their physical body. So the body that has been built from their food choices. And I say choices, although that's not entirely accurate. Food doesn't start out as a choice. Food starts out as an absolute fundamental need. As we're gestating in the womb, it's simply there. Our nourishment is simply there. Through the placenta, through the umbilical cord, all our needs are met. There's never a moment where we feel hunger. This is obviously in stark contrast to the transition to being outside the womb, when most of a newborn's cries are in response to the feeling of hunger. So if you've ever heard a newborn baby cry, you can understand what that feeling must be like, how overwhelming, even tinged with a bit of fear. And so again, in the yogic system, The root chakra is associated with our food body, our basic needs for survival, and the structure of our being. But there's another element of food that's really interesting, this kind of understanding of the body occurring in sheaths or layers. This physical body is certainly what we engage with outwardly. It's the vessel, if you will. It's how we move through the world. But there are four other layers contained within this physical sheath. You can think about this outer layer as like a lampshade. And then, you know, if there were such a thing as multiple lampshades layered on top of one another, the light bulb would be your soul. And in Sanskrit, it's called Anandamaya Kosha, which means the bliss body, which I think is really gorgeous. So I'm offering this, an invitation to the invitation that Tantra and Yoga extend to us, which say that this physical body is actually a means of understanding, protecting, getting closer to our emotional body, our intellectual body, our consciousness body, and our soul. So just breathe that in for a moment. Is that how you're orienting to your physical body at the moment? Is that how you're feeding yourself at present? Our first food source is, in most cases, our mother's body. Let's say in all cases, our first food source is the womb, right? We are being fed by the body in which we're gestating. Outside the womb, that's not the case for all of us. I myself was adopted, and so I was never fed from my birth mother's body, from her breast, from breast milk. That intimate act of feeding, and whether it stopped at gestation or continued on through a breastfeeding environment, is another way of understanding this very real correlation between being fed and being emotionally comforted. The skin-to-skin contact, the smell of mother. Smell is the sense associated with the root chakra. It's built into our physiology and our psychology right away that there is an association between physical and emotional comfort. And in the event that we didn't have that close relationship, or there was, I'm going to call my experience an amount of trauma, right? Being separated from that body that I was wired to orient to, and being bottle fed by a stranger essentially until I was adopted and my mother could incorporate a little more care and nurturing. Either way, there's an understanding that the physical sustenance comes along with an emotional fulfillment as well, whether we're feeling full or empty at the end of the exchange. Through the food body, we interact with subtler forces. And so, in still kind of a gross level, if we haven't eaten for a long time or we're over full, I'm certain every one of you has experienced an emotional impact, right? Whether there's a deficiency or an overabundance, there's an emotional and mental side effect. I would argue that there's always also a spiritual side effect, but it just depends on which body we're most oriented to. And I think for most of us, we're most aware of our physical layer and our emotional layer, for better or for worse. We've all inherited and created our own food patterns. So there's some level of imprinting that happens in that first food relationship, right? Our first food relationship is gestation. It's inside the womb, which we're being imprinted by lots of things. All of the hormones that rush through the pregnant person's body have an impact on our experience of being held and fed and nurtured. And then once we're outside the womb, that experience only increases and continues. And so as I'm speaking, I just invite and encourage you to tune into what sensations are currently present in your body, if any. and allow for just an intuitive correlation to be made. What is your present moment relationship to food, being fed, and being emotionally fulfilled? And sometimes that intuitive answer doesn't come in the form of words, so please feel free to dispense with language at the moment. That's why I'm talking and you're not. I asked myself a series of questions in getting ready for this talk. Are your current food patterns based on nature or modern culture? Sustainability or convenience? Nourishment or self-consciousness? And again, just allow for that intuitive internal response to those questions. I'll read them again. Are your current food patterns based on nature or modern food culture? Sustainability or convenience? Nourishment or self-consciousness? Consider the emotional impact of self-consciousness, right? Like, I can only feed myself certain things because of how I believe food will impact my body. Sustainability or convenience? Is it worth my time to prepare a meal? Am I worth the time? Food is a primary means of showing and receiving care. So probably there are some of you listening who love to cook, who love to prepare food for others, and there's a gesture of love inherent in cooking for people. I've been watching a lot of Queer Eye, and of course, Anthony is my favorite human ever. I want to date him. Don't tell my husband. And this beautiful piece of the show, I think, is always in his segment when it really is the expression of food as love, food as relational. Food is a way of understanding other cultures. And I say that first because I think most of us are actually very, very far away from understanding our indigenous culture through the food that we're eating. And indigenous just means of place. So I wonder, where are your ancestors from? Regardless of how long, you know, probably a lot of us have colonialist ancestors. So regardless of how long we've been on this present land, and I encourage you to find out whose land you're actually on. I'm in Tucson, and it's the land of the Tohono O'odham people, amongst others, but that's who I'm sure of. This is a big part of our healing, our relationship to body and belonging and place, and perhaps connecting to a deeper core of emotionality when it comes to our nourishment, rather than simply, I'm sad and so I'm going to eat a box of crackers because I feel like a piece of shit and I'm not worth making a meal for. It's a little bit of my own internal dialogue at certain times of my life. So, whose land are you on? How long has it been since your ancestors have been on their indigenous land? Maybe a very, very, very long time. And do you have any remnants of that original indigenous food culture? Does your family serve a traditional dish at any holiday? What food traditions have been adopted that give you comfort? Because those are valuable too. Again, reflecting on this talk this morning, we always have a raw veggie tray. No matter what time of year it is, no matter what occasion it is, there's always a raw veggie tray and some kind of like white, blobby, wiggly dip, that, like, God knows what it's made of. Generally, there's like a basket with some off-brand corn chips and salsa. Again, like, regardless of what time of year it is, regardless of what the situation is, there's a raw veggie tray and there's chips and salsa. I have come to take comfort in this. And it doesn't mean that it makes me feel connected to my roots or my ancestors, but there is a kind of comfort in that. And with tradition comes familiarity, right? Those two things go hand in hand. Familiarity, tradition. This is what we do. And again, here's just a simple invitation. We'll go into a more directed practice in just a minute. What exactly is bringing you comfort? What aspect of the food tradition is bringing you comfort? Now, if you have the freedom to close your eyes for a few minutes, or if that feels good to you, I encourage you to do that. If you're not able to, or you just don't want to, don't. But see if you can let the body become a little more still, connecting more of your attention to the reality of physical ground. You might be standing on it, you might be sitting on it, you might lay down on it. Orient your attention to still, solid ground. And then whatever availability is in your body for stillness, you'll take on. You don't need to force yourself to be rigid. Inhale slowly through your nostrils. Sense the breath moving deep into your lungs, soft belly. And then exhale completely. Imagine or sense your diaphragm gently snuggling up against your lungs and emptying them out. Relax your shoulders. And with your eyes closed or quiet, imagine in your mind's eye, see a scene as far back as you can remember in your life of mealtime with family. And you may have a sense immediately of what the general mood is. Just take in this information. We're not here to judge it or fix it. What is the general mood of mealtime? Who is there? Do you have a sense of being excited by what is on your plate? What is the conversation like? What is the undertone of the conversation like? What is not being spoken? What is the feeling that you're left with when the meal is over? Notice your body. Be attentive without trying to fix or change. Body sensations, images, words. Restore your focus on the reality of physical, stable ground underneath you right now. And to whatever degree you can, let your body soften into it. Draw your inhale deeply into your lungs, soft belly. And as you exhale, gently draw navel to spine, sensing or visualizing your diaphragm, snuggling up against your lungs and emptying them out. If you're able to use the chat, you can type in what your impression of that was or anything that you found noteworthy. If you want to unmute yourself, you're welcome to and share. And if you don't want to share, you're not obligated to. If you want to jot some things down in a journal, please do. I'm just going to give a few seconds in case you're typing or trying to unmute yourself. Okay. If something's still coming through, keep typing and I'll read it once I finish this next piece. So perhaps from the visualization, and maybe you didn't even need the visualization, to connect some dots about emotional associations with food and eating. Now, I've talked so far about food traditions and food rituals in a more collective and what's the word I want to use? Conscious, deliberate manner. So we gather together, it's Christmas, we always have a turkey and we always have a ham on Christmas. That's my house. We always have baked apples that my Aunt Anne makes. We always have scrambled eggs for breakfast and my mom's Bisquick cinnamon sugar coffee cake. It's like the best thing on the planet Earth. Now that is not an indigenous food, but it's a practice, it's a ritual, it's a tradition. But I wanna talk about other kinds of food rituals and traditions. The food rituals and traditions that show up when we are feeling a deficit emotionally, physically, spiritually. I don't know about you, but my favorite food tradition is a box of crackers and way too much cheese and way too much wine and calling that dinner. It's been a long time since I've done that, but it's still like there. For a long time, it was a pint of ice cream, which none of these things I'm saying, I mean to suggest like that's a bad thing to do. However, the reason I chose those things, it was almost like when you drive home and you don't remember driving home. You get home and you don't remember kind of how you got there. You just remember where you left from and now you're home and like what the hell happened in between. For myself, my food traditions took on this kind of like blank, numbing energy. And there were very specific foods that I would and do still at times reach for. So cheese, ice cream, very, very heavy, very, very fatty, very, very cold. We're gonna get a little bit into some Ayurvedic food understanding here in a moment, but even like crackers, dry, crunchy, pretty lifeless, not very nutrient dense. It's not a complex meal. It's not something that's going to sustain me by any means. Wine, you know, it's kind of all very quick fix things. These are calories, they're dense, they're gonna fill me up. This wine is going to give a certain kind of feeling, but almost always, along with those foods, was a very specific behavior, which was isolated, alone, often in the dark with the television on. So while this food ritual is, in my view, pretty self-destructive, and I've come to know that now. For a while, it was sustaining a very specific part of me. And so here's another example of how food sustains us emotionally. Those food practices were sustaining a belief about myself. Now, it took me a while to untangle what that belief about myself was, but in doing that first meditation, I was alone a lot. I'm the youngest of three. My brothers were quite a bit older, left the house, were very busy with sports. Both my parents worked full-time, so I was left to myself quite a bit to figure out what to eat for dinner. I was busy also all through high school, but figure out what you're going to eat. Get your own breakfast together. Figure out your own lunch. Right? So there actually wasn't a lot of togetherness associated with food, and quite a bit of loneliness associated with food. And then, of course, enter the period of adolescence where it was like severe calorie restriction and lots of anger and fights about food and fear, really fear of food. And I still struggle to make a meal for myself. But this behavior, right on the surface, it's kind of, I don't want to say obvious, right? There's been some distillation of these experiences to bring me to a deeper understanding. But those foods in particular, and I'll get to the Ayurveda piece next, so this all kind of makes sense and you can draw some of your own conclusions for yourself. The foods that I was eating were so dense, you know, like literally would stop up my digestive tract. Alcohol created a total haze. So as I said at the very beginning, Annamaya Kosha, food body, is the first layer of five, the center of which, the core of which, is our soul. So if we are feeding ourselves dense, congesting, blurring, intoxicating things, we are creating a barrier between our surface-level existence and our soul. And I do believe that that is a protective mechanism, right? There's something I'm not quite willing to look at, or there's something there that it doesn't feel safe quite yet to look at. And I think each of us at our deepest instinctual level knows we've got to get there at some point. And in order to get there, it's going to require a lot of change. And it might change things that I'm not quite ready to change, like my relationship dynamic or the way that I socialize, or the way that I've defined myself as, like, you know, the girl who loves red wine, or even my physical body, right? I have to eat this way because it makes me look this way. I know that's a whole, I mean, that could be a 12-week course, but take a breath. Fries and beer. Sorry, I'm just noticing now the chats. Fries and beer as the go-to traditional foods, and just some affirmation of what I've shared so far. Thank you both for chiming in. In Ayurveda, food, and this is true of the origins of Western medicine, let food be thy medicine, and let your medicine be thy food. Food is the most direct means of impacting change at the physical level, other than movement, right? But we have to eat to survive. So food plays an essential role in our well-being. And everything in Ayurveda is broken down into first elemental spaces. So earth, water, fire, air, ether. Food falls into one of those five, all foods fall into one of those five categories. Even the tastes, the way things taste, that's actually a big part of it. So if things are sweet, like sweet potatoes, most root vegetables. Grains are considered sweet food. Even meat is considered a sweet taste. Those are the earth and water elements. Another example would be dandelion greens. They're very, very bitter. The bitter taste is associated with air and ether, so it dries things out and it creates movement. There's lots of good resources on food tastes and the elements on Banyan Botanicals, so I'm not going to spend too much time. There's also more information on this in my Goddess Cleanse, and I'm going to talk about that at the end here. So all foods carry an elemental charge. And one piece of kind of the overarching healing impetus in Ayurveda is this understanding that like increases like and opposites cure each other. So ether is on the opposite end of the elemental spectrum from earth. So if I have too much earth element or too much earth and water, if I'm overweight, if I'm constipated, and constipation can fall in a couple categories, but stay with me. If I'm having like really heavy mucusy poops, or if I'm just carrying a lot of mucus in my head, in my gut, if I'm feeling nauseated after eating, that's too much earth, too much water. So as more than likely a temporary kind of dietary change, we would want to bring in more air, more ether, probably more fire too, a little bit of heat, to get things moving, to get things digested and broken down, because earth is so dense. And please don't take all of this as dogma. It's always better to work with someone in figuring out a protocol if any of this is resonating for you. But let's just understand from here that all foods carry an elemental charge or associated with kind of elemental intelligence. And what we reach for is either clarifying and healing our body or congesting and numbing our body, our relationship to our physical body. So if this physical body, the Anamaya Kosha, is my vessel for my soul, in order to get closer and closer to my soul, which requires getting through my emotional body, getting through my intellectual body, moving through the mental body, which is more like the mind of meditation, right? That intuitive mind, to get to my soul, I want to be clarifying and cleansing and healing my body. This is why Ayurveda recommends cleansing at least twice a year in a very specific way, which again, I outline in the Goddess Cleanse, which we'll talk about later, and eating seasonally. Eating seasonally is really tricky in modern culture because we can get avocados whenever we want. We can get strawberries whenever we want. So most of us have actually forgotten what grows when. What actually is winter food? It's actually pretty limited, depending on where you live, of course. In Tucson, Arizona, it doesn't get as cold as it does in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, so it's different winter food. But the point is, are you looking to the earth to show you what's available and what's going to be sustaining, not only for your body, but for the earth herself? Or is it just about what's convenient and what recipe you got from your Whole30 daily email and, you know, what you're used to eating? What is really the easiest recipe to go in your Instant Pot? I'm not knocking the Instant Pot. I'm just bringing to light how our modern culture has totally changed how we relate to food and even how we're able to conceive of food. When we reach for food, we're primarily being driven, this is my hypothesis, by habit, convenience, and beliefs related to self-worth. I'm going to go to the grocery store. I'm going to buy all these things. I'm going to meal prep on Sunday because I hate my body and I'm going to do this whole 30 thing and it's going to solve all my problems. I've got to get off sugar, so I'm going to do XYZ and I'm going to only eat this. We're always looking to what we perceive to be the problem. Sometimes we're not even conscious of that. And I know I'm speaking a little bit cyclically here, but I trust all of you can follow me down my winding road, trying not to go too fast. Again, if you want to type into the chat, add your own perspective or a yes 100%, that's good too. I want to circle back to the role of food in clarifying our physical body, clarifying and strengthening our physical body so that we can participate in our life. Obviously, this makes a huge difference in how we show up in our relationships, how we show up at work, what we throw our energy into. I spent more than a decade drinking, you know, if not a bottle of wine every night, most nights. In my 20s, I could do that and still like show up and plow through what life was asking of me. But at a certain point, I completely crumbled. I couldn't get through a day of work. I could barely get through a yoga class, taking one or teaching one, and my relationships were a total mess. So again, it's really important to me to hold to and to share with you all that in the tantric perspective, there is nothing in nature that is inherently bad or good. It always comes down to alchemy and how our actions extend into lived experience and our choices commingle with our lived experience. So it took, I think, a full year of total sobriety and very, very, very different lifestyle choices to clear up my skin, to clear up my digestion, to restore my creativity, to function within a healthy relationship, to have a clear vision about what I wanted for my life, to start being able to make money and retain money. And all of those things happened, you know, on the surface level as a result of getting sober. There was a lot of work that it took for me to get sober. What was that belief that enabled me to reach for that almost every single day, whether I wanted to or not, and to start making other choices, including cooking for myself a lot more and naming for myself through my actions that I was worth taking care of. I'm going to read a share that someone just typed in. I'm going to keep it anonymous just so that, you know, I can share this and everyone feels comfortable. I find that I put effort into a meal when it is for me and my family, but if I'm only feeding myself, I tend to take the convenient way out. Totally. And that's really, I think, a powerful point in this. I don't know that, you know, I can't think of a time in human history where people were eating alone until modern times, when so many of us have spent years living alone. Like, that's sort of it's something that we're taught we're supposed to do. It'll be good for you. And I don't know, I loved living alone for lots of reasons, but it changes everything regarding self-care and relating, interrelatedness. I don't know that it's that you're supposed to be doing everything for yourself all the time. And so I do want to add to this part of the conversation the very real element of grief. We're in the season of grief. Fall is the season of grief, energetically. Mourning, loss, death, release. That's why it's such a powerful time to cleanse, to clear out what is stagnant and heavy, to address what it is that enables one to say, like, well, it's for my family, so let's do something special, but it's just me, I'm alone, like, I'm just gonna have some crackers, it's fine. I'm not really that hungry anyway. What are you hungry for? You know, not to say that you need to make a big elaborate meal for yourself if it's only you that you're feeding, or that there's anything wrong with going to the hot bar at Whole Foods, but is there a way to be more conscious about how and why we feed ourselves, particularly when there are patterns that show up or have been present for quite some time? I just want to offer the possibility that working with food is one of the most basic ways to help us heal relational problems, confidence issues, even if we think it has nothing to do with food. Like, oh, I actually have a pretty, I'm okay with how I am eating. I feel pretty good. Digestion is a big focal point in all holistic healing traditions, but particularly, I can't even say that, and in Ayurveda, digestion is king, right? It's the first thing to look at to know if you don't just have a good relationship to food on that kind of prefrontal cortex level, but your body is actually being nourished and being fed in a way that is sustainable. Everyone should be pooping every single day, once or twice a day. Everyone should be pooping every single day, once or twice a day, period. Your poo should be well formed. Your poo should not smell like death. It should not be something that you're embarrassed about. All of those things are indicators that something is not getting digested properly. And I think most of us have a sense of the things that don't really agree with us, but we like them, so we eat them anyway. And Ayurveda offers a lot of really simple additions, solutions, so that you can still have ice cream, or you can still eat cheese, or you can still have, you know, whatever the thing is. Those are things that kind of mess with my digestion. So if I'm going to have ice cream or I'm going to have cheese, I'm also going to sip on some ginger tea or chew on some fennel seeds, or just make sure that my other food, my other meals during the day are like really clear, very clearly supportive of easy digestion. One of the biggest things, it's sort of my pet peeve, is this kind of blanket rule that salads are healthy. And I just want to offer, for most people I know who have a major vata imbalance — vata is the descriptor for an abundance of air and ether element — most people I know have an imbalance of vata. It shows up as nervousness, anxiety, dryness, constipation, super painful periods, irregular periods. Salads are not your friend. Raw fruits and vegetables are not your friend. Regardless of the season, you want to be cooking your food and under no circumstances drinking ice water or iced coffee or iced tea or anything like that. So again, all of this information is in much more detail in the Goddess Cleanse. We're almost to the end. I'm almost ready to give you those details. But first, consider that if your digestion on a physical level is off in any way, it is also impacting your emotional and mental digestion. So how are you feeling emotionally, mentally, if there's a sense that like, oh yeah, my food is fine, or like, I don't really need to think about it, there's not much that I would change? Well, then how are you feeling on the emotional level and mental level? I know I'm not speaking exclusively to women on this call or people who bleed, but if you are a menstruating person, your cycle is telling you a ton about your digestion. If your periods are very, very painful and irregular, your body is asking for more earth and water. If your periods are very, very heavy and they last for 7 to 10 days, your body is asking for more movement. Movement in the form of fire, movement in the form of air, lighter foods. Everyone's body is asking for more consistency. I say that with confidence. One of the simplest, most direct ways, without getting into food plans or, you know, just getting overwhelmed by the to-do list, one of the simplest and most direct ways to regulate your digestion is to eat at basically the same time every day. Eat meals at basically the same time every day and listen to how that meal impacts your body. That first hour after you eat will give you all the information you need. Are you burping? Are you farting? Are you heavy? Are you sad? Are you tired? Are you still hungry? Are you getting reflux? Another thing that I think is pretty common knowledge is just to start your day with warm water, a big glass of warm water. Some people stick some salt in there. You could stick some lemon juice in there. Everything has its own impact, but if you're drawn to one thing over another, trust your intuition. I really believe in that. You could throw some turmeric powder and some black pepper in there. I find the peppercorn, the flakes of pepper kind of get stuck in my throat, so I don't like that as much. We're going to finish here today. I know that's a lot of information. The last thing we'll do before I'll talk specifically about this practice that I have to offer you is just a final meditative check-in. So again, maybe now it's not possible for you to close your eyes or be quiet. Maybe it is possible now if you had been driving and now you're somewhere still. But everyone, connect your conscious mind to the reality of stable ground underneath you, even if it's a car seat. And take a few slow breaths. Draw your inhale deep into your lungs, soft belly. At the very end of your exhale, gently draw belly to spine, soften your shoulders, and empty your lungs. If concentrating on your breath creates any feeling of unease or unrest, leave it. Let your body simply breathe on its own. Or you could start to count silently to yourself, inhaling for 3 or 4, exhale for twice as long. Just a few rounds of this breath. And then allow yourself to scan your body as a landscape of sensation. Notice where in your physical reality there is a sense of feeling full in that yummy kind of way. It might be a tiny spot, a fleck of the landscape where there is a true feeling of nourishment. Whatever you find, wherever you find it, hold your conscious mind there. Breathe into that. And let this be here as a resource for you, a place within you where you can go back to should you want to. And for the next couple of minutes, I just invite you to move around the landscape of your body again, feeling for the place in you that is really hungry. You may at first identify just kind of stomach, physical appetite hunger, and that might be very real. But consider a deeper kind of hunger, a real need. Where do you find that in your body? Intuitively check in with what you're hungry for. What is the felt need? If it helps you get clear, complete the following three phrases for yourself based on this hunger. I am, fill in the blank. I want. I need. I'm going to take a couple deep breaths. If your eyes are closed, or even if they're not, you can bring your palms together and rub them until you get some gentle heat, some friction there. And once you have that feeling of warmth between your hands, cup your palms over your eyes. Soften your brow. Take a long, slow, deep breath in, belly soft. Full exhale. And then start to blink your eyes open and slowly release your hands. To whatever degree you have tapped into something, some deeper inner intelligence, let that guide your choices today. And just notice what is possible for you as far as making a shift. Maybe it's what you keep on hand and moving more towards the positive. So we're often in this kind of restriction mode, which I think is quite dangerous and conducive to outbursts later. So what can you have on hand that is nourishing to you? I always have ginger tea in my house, no exceptions, always. I also always have dark chocolate in my house, no exceptions. What is something that you take comfort in that feels really good to be comforted by? Keep that on hand. And if you'd like to spend some time connecting to food practices in that vein, more around the what do I want and can I give myself more of that rather than the less, rather than the restriction, rather than the never again will I touch XYZ, that's actually what my Goddess Cleanse is about. And yes, it does give you guidelines and steps to engage a traditional Ayurvedic cleanse, which is khichdi, which is basmati rice or really any kind of rice, and mung beans cooked together to create this really warm, delicious stew. You can add whatever spices you want. You can add whatever veg you want. It's one of my favorite practices. And alongside those food practices and recipes, I give you daily mantra meditation and even some physical practices. So I created the Goddess Cleanse based on a Vedic celebration called Navaratri. Navaratri is a celebration of the three primary wisdom goddesses, Durga, Lakshmi, and Saraswati. You don't have to have any previous knowledge of the Vedic system, yoga, the goddesses. It really is open to everyone to tap into Mother Nature. How is nature currently able to move through you? And giving you some tools to ensure that she can move freely and benevolently through your body. So for all of you who took the time to respond yes and send me your email and show up on this call today, I'm offering the Goddess Cleanse to you for a 50% discount. I'm going to send out the link for the Goddess Cleanse with the discount code with the recording of this call. So you'll get that later this afternoon. But what I want you to understand about that practice and that process, it's not time limited, so you have access to it forever. So maybe you're not ready to start it today. Maybe because we're almost at Thanksgiving, you really want to do that and kind of dig a little deeper into your relationship with food and your body before that. But if you don't, then you can just purchase it. The discount code will be good for the month of November. And then you have it later. You have it waiting for you in the spring when you feel like you kind of want to do something, a cleansing practice. So that's it for today, folks. If you want to type anything into the chat as a final comment, or if you have a question, please do. Otherwise, I will take my leave of you with great love and a lot of excitement and gratitude that you were here. You'll be getting the recording of this conversation by this afternoon. It's Saturday, so I'll send it out this afternoon when my baby is taking a nap. And you're very welcome. Yeah, it usually does. I got a message. This is coming in at the exact right time. It usually does, you know, when we decide to show up. So I'm really grateful that you were here, and I hope that some of this information was resonant and helpful. And if you have any questions, again, please don't hesitate to reach out to me, stacymoves@gmail.com. Take care, everyone. Thank you so much.